Welcome to Health Cetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy. Now, we usually do a Health Cetera update of news, and certainly in the news is the action by the House and the Senate in terms of a plan for repealing, maybe replacing Obamacare. But all of this has a lot of people very nervous. And one of the people who has heard about the concerns of many people who gain coverage under the Affordable Care Act and fear that they will lose that coverage is one of our own Health Cetera co-producers, Christy Westphan. And so I asked her to join me today in sharing with all of our listeners what she is seeing in her work. And her work is, part of her work, is as a pediatric nurse practitioner serving an underserved and vulnerable population in Southern California. And she's a registered nurse and has been a pediatric nurse practitioner for, Christy, how many years?
For 11 years.
11 years. And I want to thank you, first of all, for the work that you're doing with Health Cetera, Christy. You're doing great programming for us, and we appreciate it. But also, I think, for sharing with, we had a producer's call recently, and you were sharing some of the stories. And I thought it was really important for our listeners to hear about how some families are really quite stressed over what is coming down the pike for them as the Republican Congress and President-elect Trump talk about repealing and replacing Obamacare. So what are you seeing from the patients that you serve?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I've been a practicing pediatric nurse practitioner for about 11 years, and a few elections have come and gone, but it really hasn't been until this election that I've really strongly seen a change in the dynamic at the bedside in the way that my patients and their families are perceiving the upcoming changes. This time around is different. The pulse is thready. So, I mean, these rumblings from repeal and replace, they've trickled down to the bedside. I'm profoundly touched by the narratives of these young patients and their families, and they really are pondering and anxious about what these changes might mean. And the families that I care for, these are families that live in San Diego. They live in El Cajon. They're from diverse backgrounds. They benefit from Medicaid. They benefit from CHIP. In fact, not only benefit.
CHIP is
the Children's Health Insurance Program. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Pretty much essential to providing health insurance coverage for low-income children throughout California and everywhere. So, I mean, this is an essential benefit, and I mean, CHIP, not meant to gamble, but it's a sure thing. It definitely results in better access to care for our children here in California. So, I mean, it's interesting because if I have a patient that comes into me and they've maybe had a fever for 2 weeks on and off at night, they're worried something might be wrong. I'm worried that something might be wrong. I make recommendations. I think we need to go have some blood tests done. I think we need to go and look into this further and figure out what the root of the problem is. So I let you know what the plan is. I give you instructions that we're going to go have the blood work done. You go, you have the blood work done. We have a plan. And do you think I'm not going to call you and let you know the results? Absolutely not. And the way things are right now with the planning and with the news and with everybody wondering what's going to happen with repeal and replace, that's exactly what's happening. Our patients and our families and Americans are being kind of carrot dangled in front of the face like, oh, we know there's a problem. We know that there are things that we need to solve. However, the lack of a follow-through on that is just very concerning to these families.
So Christy, you have been working with this same population for more than 8 years. Is that correct?
I've actually been serving communities that are under-resourced for about 15 years. 15 years of my career. So
what difference did you see with the Affordable Care Act?
I saw more families coming in for primary care and well visits. I've seen more families coming in and being able to have visits where they come back to follow up for problems. I've seen people have more open discussions about feeling safe about being in our country. I've heard immigrants and refugees grateful for the fact that they have the security to know that their families and their children have a future in this country.
So you are serving an undocumented population as well.
Correct.
So tell us a couple stories about what these patients are now saying to you.
Yeah, it's been interesting. So immigrants, refugees, low-income families. So I've had school-age children that actually have mentioned to me that they're afraid that they're going to get kicked out of school because of walls being put up and they may get thrown over, and bullying that's happened here in our backyard in San Diego because of comments like that. I've had teenagers who have divulged feeling anxious because they've heard their parents having conversations. And granted, we may make assumptions that children may not be able to fully perceive what some of these bigger news-related issues are, but believe me, children get the undertones, even if they aren't able to understand the minuscule details that go with them. I mean, I've had other teenagers that come in and they want to get refills, multiple refills of their oral, you know, contraception pills, because they are terrified that, all right, we've made a good decision, we've made a responsible decision to take responsibility and accountability for actions in their bodies, and now they're horrified that they will no longer have access to contraception.
Well. And so let me just say, you live in California, where your governor, Governor Jerry Brown, has said, well, we are going to, even on climate change, we are going to be a leader in climate change. I just heard today that California has the fifth largest economy in the world.
Yes.
And so the idea of if the Affordable Care Act is repealed and maybe replaced, maybe not replaced, and if it is replaced, who knows what we'll have. Are you confident that California will step in and make sure that the people you're seeing are still having access to care?
I'm optimistic. I admit, budgeting, not my strongest point. Work in progress on that educational point. However, I do think that California does remain committed to taking care of all of its people. Just like, I mean, I believe in the innermost of my heart that in terms of reforming healthcare, that all of our leaders do want to make things better. California is a special circumstance. We do provide health coverage to undocumented children. Our population is a little bit unique when compared to maybe other states. I mean, if things change where there's more state accountability and less federal involvement and federal support, California is going to get hit very hard.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if we have the financial resource to be able to continue covering families without help from the federal government.
Yeah, yeah. So when parents come to you who might be undocumented or who have been on Medicaid, recently got on Medicaid, or whose children are on SCHIP, what do you tell them when they say they're worried? You were sharing with me that a woman actually started to cry in your office because she was so worried.
It's true. I mean, I think a lot of what we do as nurses and nurse practitioners is really listen to our patients and our families. And what I've been hearing from my families is saddening, disheartening, disturbing. And the best things that I can do for them are listen to them and reassure them that nursing will always be here for them. We will always care for them. We will always advocate for them. And California is going to do everything that it can to try to keep them safe. In the meantime, I mean, we do a lot of education. We do a lot of talking about, well, if things do happen, what are the things that concern you the most about your family's health? Let's talk about it. Let's make a plan. Because it feels helpless to feel like the rug is being pulled out from underneath you and then not knowing what those next steps will be. So I find helping families troubleshoot through solutions, allowing parents to cry it out or voice their concerns, or the kids, you know, letting them talk about how they feel is therapeutic in the time that I have with them.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think are next steps that we need to take with families to help them be participants in expressing their support of access to healthcare?
I think that it's really important, more now than ever, that every American realizes that in our democracy, every voice matters. I think that when families are concerned about issues, they need to remember that they may feel like they're one small person amongst a sea of turbulent whatever's going on right now. But one voice starts to get reach another and another, and that mounts up, and that's powerful. And each one of us, just by the chance conversations that we may have, will make a difference. And as a pediatric nurse practitioner, of course, advocating for kids, I think there's tremendous opportunity in continuing to help our children learn how to grow into civically minded, civically engaged adults. There's so many things that we can do to help teach kids how to get involved and get involved in productive ways.
Yeah. Well, let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Cetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy. You can follow us online at healthmediapolicy.com. And today, at this moment, I'm talking with Christy Westphan, who is a pediatric nurse practitioner and a senior fellow at the Center for Health Media and Policy and co-producer of Health Cetera. But we asked her, actually the producers were having a conversation about coverage of what's going on in Congress right now with repeal and possibly replace the Affordable Care Act. And the stories that Christy was sharing with us were so compelling that I asked Christy if I could interview her today. And so we're talking about her own experience with serving a vulnerable population in San Diego and sharing some of the stories and experiences that she has had. And so is your health center concerned about what's coming down the pike?
I think everybody in healthcare is concerned about what's coming down the pike. Absolutely. And it's not only the people that work there, it's everybody. It's the kids, it's the families. And I mean, the media, it's interesting. I've never really thought about having conversations about health could actually maybe make health a little worse. But there's been a lot of media coverage that's been not so positive, and these anxieties, they trickle down. When parents watch things and they get worried about not having coverage for their children, while kids may not fully understand the meanings of things like climate change, gun control, what an opioid epidemic might be, or what repeal and replace might mean for their everyday health, they're very sensitive to those undertones, and we really need to work together to make sure that we're helping parents help kids to better cope and to move forward.
So we're both at this conference today in San Diego that deals with health policy and nursing. And you have presented a poster here, and it's around a home visitation program for high-risk mothers. I think one of the things that people don't understand is how much is in the Affordable Care Act. And we talked about the concern about here are successful programs of home visitation. I want you to talk about what a home visitation program is, but that it's included, this program is being funded in part through the Affordable Care Act and could go away. Talk about what's a home visitation program for high-risk mothers.
Yeah, so home visitation programs, they're not new news. Home visitation just describes a visitor going out to a home to meet families where they live, to help provide services, to help connect them to services, provide health care, and really work with combating the social determinants of health in a real-time, real-location type of model. There's been decades of research that shows from David Olds and from Harriet Kitzman on the Nurse Family Partnership, and showing that nurse-led home visitation is great for patients and cost-effective. So it's kind of a double win. And before the ACA, home visitation programs were very fragmented with their funding. It was through funding by the ACA, or Obamacare, that actually allowed home visitation programs to be able to further expand into the states. It's not possible for these programs to be sustainable without federal commitment.
Actually, though, the Olds program was spreading, and at WBAI listeners locally, the Nurse Family Partnership has been supported for a number of years now by New York City.
Thank goodness.
Yes, and it is because, and it's in other parts of the country, but it is because of the evidence for that program that it made its way into the Affordable Care Act in terms of not the Nurse Family Partnership specifically, but home visitation programs for high-risk families. And so here's a solution that works, and we don't know whether Congress will repeal that part of the Affordable Care Act or not.
I am optimistic because one of the resounding themes that continues is how can we cut costs? How can we still continue to provide high quality care, but be cost effective at the same time? And home visitation is one model that I think will actually very much allow that. The institutionalization of health has increased costs. I mean, every time you walk into an office, every time you walk into a hospital, there's a price tag attached to that. And what better way to get a better grasp on measuring those social determinants of health that, let's face it, when you go into an office, you get a piece of paper, you check off a box, and that's your assessment. So home visitation is real. It's gritty. It's in the everyday lives of our patients. And who better to really get in, listen, dig down deep than nurses?
Yeah. So we still have to do a wait and see, though. I'm hoping that Congress will have enough sense not to cut some of the programs that are funded for expansion under the Affordable Care Act, like home visitation programs. But we just don't know yet, do we?
We don't. Again, we remain optimistic.
Now, one of the things that Congress is talking about, and Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House in particular, is turning Medicaid into block grants. And you last week did a segment on block grants and why this is important and what impact it makes on Medicaid and access to care if Medicaid is turned into a block grant. Why don't we talk about that again, since I think it is complicated, and for new listeners, I think it's an important point to understand. And I want to preface this conversation with the fact that there was a really good blog, and I'm sorry I don't remember who wrote it, a couple months ago by somebody who said, keep your eye on Medicaid. They're going to be making proposals about Medicare, and a lot of folks in this country are going to get up in arms about Medicare because it affects older adults who are vocal and some people who are disabled, and they are very vocal and activist. What they're hoping is that nobody will pay attention to the Medicaid changes, and that's with the vulnerable populations. It's for people who are poor, largely, and so
correct.
That could happen under everybody's radar screen.
So it's important to have an understanding of what the programs really mean. I mean, when you think about a block grant versus an entitlement program, that can sound like a whole bunch of mumbo jumbo if you're not used to thinking about that. And I mean, just briefly, right now, Medicaid as stands is an entitlement program, meaning that anyone who is eligible and enrolled is entitled to benefits. An entitlement program means that everybody is entitled to the benefits if you are eligible. So it's not something that everyone who is in Medicaid and is enrolled in it would be able to have access to care. So philosophically, that's very important. It suggests that healthcare is a basic human right more so than a privilege. And it is challenging because there's not a cap on funding for things, which is where some people get concerned about the money suck potential of Medicaid. Medicaid as stands, half of all Medicaid beneficiaries right now are poor children. The second half of them, a fourth of that, are pregnant women, and then you have lower income elderly as well as the disabled. This is a program that traditionally serves underserved Americans. So switching it to a block grant would limit the amount of money that they would be eligible for. It would create a certain cap that once states used that certain amount of money, there would be no additional help from the federal government. And each state is different. I mean, California, again, is a beast within itself. And by creating that block grant and only allocating X amount of dollars, maybe it is considered an equal type of policy, but it's in no way equitable to our most vulnerable population. So most of us that are advocates for children, we strongly oppose transforming Medicaid into a block grant because it would be damaging to vulnerable populations, especially to our children.
And I'd point out that the rumblings are that they would make the amount of the block grant would be at a rate that was pre-Obamacare. And so Obamacare expanded Medicaid coverage. It would not support the number of people who are currently on Medicaid. Did I say Medicare? Medicaid.
Medicaid.
It would expand the number of people. It would be, They would fund it at pre-Obamacare levels, Medicaid, give the states that money in a block grant instead of paying fee-for-service for services, and the states would have to decide, because they wouldn't have enough money to cover everybody, do we cover fewer people or do we cut back on the services that are being provided to people on Medicaid? And if you're cutting back on services, which services and how do you decide? Now, I want to point out that some years ago, Oregon tried to control costs by having town halls to talk about what do we value, what is important around paying for health care, and they tried to set some limits on what procedures would be funded and what would not be funded. And they ran into some real difficulties.
Muddy water.
Yes, because of a child who needed a transplant, and the Medicaid folks decided it was more important for everybody to have primary care, or the state decided it was more important for everybody to have access to primary care under Medicaid, but it would mean they couldn't fund transplants. So here was a child whose very survival was to get a transplant, and there was not support for funding that. So it is about rationing care.
If we want to invest in the future of this country, sacrificing the needs of our children is not the answer to go about that.
Yeah. So you had mentioned to me in the short time we have back left that you think we need to do more with educating our children about paying attention to what's going on.
Oh, heck yeah. Knowledge is power. And you know what? There's been, again, lots of news, lots of press about news maybe not being factual. And we need to grow our children to be critical consumers of news, not just blindly reading, listening, and absorbing everything that comes at them, but actually being able to make very intelligent decisions and critical decisions about where they're getting their news from.
Yeah, good. And so how do we do this?
Yeah.
You're going to do this as a nurse practitioner?
You know what? We're all going to do it. Every one of us. Because in order to grow a child, it takes a village. And we are that village.
Yeah.
So, a couple of hints. Age appropriateness is key. With kids, you got to make it fun. I grew up in a kindergarten classroom, led me to being a PNP, and every day my work is play. We need to make sure that when we address kids with these things, you got to make it fun. So, again, younger kids, they're really not going to be able to grasp these headlines and these big concepts, but we can definitely instill this civic-minded spirit in them by talking to them about history. I mean, San Diego, we love Dr. Seuss, right? He has a book out that's actually about voting, and I actually gave it to one of the kids that I'm very close to, and we went through it together, and we looked at it, and it's great to give kids books to be able to look through. There's a book about senators. There are all these children's books with amazing pictures discussing the legislative process in kid-friendly language that is great. It's helpful. They get excited about it, and it generates conversation. One of the best gifts that we can give our young children, especially when they're at that age where they're super curious, is to be pro-curiosity. We want to teach them to ask questions. We want them to know that it's okay to disagree. But when we disagree, we are kind and we are civil when we have our disagreements. And all these things taught at a young age, when these kids grow up, it's going to be magical.
Yeah.
So, I mean, along with younger kids, we have school-age kids, and one of the things that I found fun in interacting with them are, and it's funny because she talked about it in the conference earlier, political cartoons. They're an amazing portal of entry to teach kids how to have fun with politics and with policy. And, I mean, I've done it with family members where we'll just get something out and we'll look at it and kind of take it apart and laugh, and it's a great teaching tool for kids, especially school-age kids. They're really going to respond well to this. And sometimes they collect them. Sometimes, I mean, one of the schools that I'd volunteered to do a little talk at, they had actually, one of the kids liked the idea so much, they wanted to start like a little cartoon of their own. So I think that's a great way to engage kids in policy, politics, and being proactive.
Yeah.
So with older kids, especially teenagers, we really need to be having those conversations about social media. I mean, safety is important, and the election's been tough. There's been some ugliness on both sides, and it's really important to talk about bullying, to talk about safety, to talk about self-esteem, and to talk about respect. And teenagers are old enough to have those discussions. And you think, oh, well, they're not going to talk about that with a healthcare provider. Well, guess what? for every child appointment in California where they're, you know, 12 and up, mom and dad are asked to exit the room and we do an exam with just the provider and the adolescent or teenager. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised. I mean, of course, confidentiality is key, so we're not revealing anything super, super incriminating right now, but these kids are smart, they're on social media, they know, and we need to help give them the tools to know how to take apart and dissect the news, and again, not take everything at face value, but really question things.
So what do you tell these kids when we have a president, he will be president by the time this airs, a president who says that he wants to grab women by the pussy, and who tweets out really hateful things?
I tell them that they need to, first of all, stay true to themselves. It's really easy to get wrapped up in excitement and negativity and hate and ugliness, but if we're allowed to be swept away in that wave, we become a part of it. I think it's important, as Michelle Obama has said, to rise above and continue to rise above, and that's what I tell them. So thank you, Michelle Obama. Yes. You're awesome.
Yes. Well, and I want to thank you, Christy Westphan, for you are awesome. You are a fabulous nurse practitioner. You're a fabulous nurse and producer, and we're delighted to have you as part of this team. Your clinical experience is so rich and so important to these discussions. So thank you for all that you do. I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, Diana. Thank you. So I guess just to leave with three thoughts at the end. First of all, people, every voice matters. Your voice matters. You got something to say, say it. Secondly, raising children with kindness, acceptance, integrity, and curiosity is going to grow a beautiful future for our country, regardless of the now. And third, I'm a nurse. I will always listen to you. I will always care. And as nurses, regardless of what happens to our healthcare system, we will always be there.
And very well said. And that is Christy Westphan, who is a producer with HealthCetera and a pediatric nurse practitioner par excellence. We've been talking about what's going on with the Affordable Care Act and with this Congress and what some of the fallout may be and how we all might respond. I'm Diana Mason. I'm one of the producers of this program, HealthCetera, that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy. You can follow us online at healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. Now, next up, I'm going to be talking with a nurse and a physician about a new charter for professionalism for healthcare organizations. In these turbulent times, many of these healthcare organizations are very concerned about what's coming down the pike. And regardless, even if the Affordable Care Act was being refined, the behavior of some healthcare organizations gives us pause. And so a group of people came up with a charter that includes principles by which healthcare organizations should be trying to operate. And so we're going to talk about that charter and what it means for all of you. So again, I'm Diana Mason. You're listening to HealthCetera on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and streaming at WBAI.org. WBAI.org.